This podcast is marketing material for a South Africa investment professional only.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining our monthly Global Markets Perspective podcast. My name is Philip Robotham, and I'm delighted to be joined by Tom Walker, co-head real estate investment and fund manager of our locally approved Schroders Global Cities Fund based in London. For more information on any of the topics discussed on this podcast, please do not hesitate to contact your usual Schroders representative. In this episode, I'm actually going to be handing the reins over to my colleague David Brett, who will be chatting with Tom in our studio in London about a very topical investment theme right now, listed property. Why so topical? Well, SA listed property staged a remarkable and somewhat unexpected recovery in the back end of last year. This actually resulted in the sector topping the rankings as it finished 2023 as the best performing asset class in the country, after being the worst performer in 2022. And this sharp rebound is not specific to South Africa. Global listed property also has staged a remarkable recovery in the back end of last year and continues into this year. Over to you guys.
Tom, thank you so much for coming to the studio. Welcome. How's your new year been?
So far, so good.
Good. Well, hopefully it will continue because it's been a really topsy-turvy time for your sector. You've had a sudden rise in inflation, we've had interest rates going up, we have the pandemic, of course, which has had a huge effect. Can you just set the scene for us and just give us a brief overview of where it's been over the last couple of years until we've got to where we are now?
Yeah, well, you're right. It's been very dramatic. It's been pretty stressful, I'm not going to lie. And not many people have wanted to talk to me about real estate, that's for sure. So really kind of the issues for the real estate sector go back to around February, March 2022, when interest rates started rising. What we saw then, the start of, was kind of the largest interest rate rise that we have seen almost ever, I think. And what that means for real estate is that the discount rate that we're using to value those cash flows is going to be much higher, which means the value of the assets that are producing those cash flows is going to be lower. So the listed market reacted very quickly to interest rates being higher. We saw most of that kind of rhetoric continue for 2023, apart from in the last quarter, when suddenly the central banks decided that interest rates were now high enough, inflation was under control, and they were even hinting at interest rate cuts. So we saw a very strong rally in that final quarter as investors thought, right, okay, now we can start to look at real estate again. Interest rates have stabilized. What's going on in this sector? Now, the interesting thing for me that has happened over the last couple of years has just been the strong fundamentals in real estate markets. That it's all been a macro-driven narrative as opposed to the micro. No one's talked to me about, you know, demand and supply of data centers. No one cares. It's just about where interest rates are going. They're going higher, sell real estate. But actually, slowly and quietly in the background, the real estate markets have been quite strong.
During that difficult period, was it difficult to see the woods from the trees? It must have been quite dark.
Yeah, it was. It was a very sort of unnerving time. But one of the things that I found strangest was that every meeting we had with companies that we invest in, every research trip we did into real estate markets, they were really strong. Management teams were actually upgrading their earnings. We saw more resilient earnings. We saw more demand. We saw supply cut off. And so I was having kind of, you know, this kind of bipolar world where I had very strong management meetings and fundamentals were great. But then in the capital markets world, where interest rates were rising and that discount rate was increasing, as I mentioned, values were just falling very fast. And that's probably kind of the most extreme it's been in my career, where the capital markets are doing one thing and then the fundamentals in the direct market are doing something else.
And were company management keeping their cool during that period? Because they must have been panicking a little bit themselves.
Well, I don't think they were panicking, actually. I think that management teams, most of them are pretty experienced. They've been doing it for a long time and they know that listed markets get jittery and they've seen it before. And because they're probably more on the coalface and they actually see, look, there's no supply. Inflation has been leading to an increase in cost of raw materials. There's no supply coming through. And I've got assets and I can see more demand for structural reasons, maybe. And so actually they knew that it would change, as I think kind of we all did. But they could actually just see that their income stream was growing. And that's really the only thing you can control as a CEO of a property company. And so, you know, they weren't panicking. They were happy. They could see that, you know, the business was actually in a good position. The key for all of them, and there would have been panic if they had weak balance sheets. you know, and it's debt, which is always the issue. You know, when the property market turns or there's something coming, if you've got a strong balance sheet, you're fine. If you've got a weak balance sheet, then you're in a tricky position. And so the only panic would have been, unfortunately, we didn't have any in our portfolio, but companies who had too much debt.
Okay, so you mentioned things have got a little bit brighter. So what has changed? Is it just the fact that interest rates might be peaking?
Yeah, well, so, you know, to sort of tell you a little bit of the craziness of kind of our world in listed real estate is, from a real estate point of view, nothing's changed. It's still as strong as it was kind of for the last couple of years. It's all to do with the macro. And pleasingly, from an active management point of view, it really feels that that narrative is beginning to shift from the macro to the micro. What has changed is that it feels like interest rates have peaked. That's all we need in the real estate sector for now, strong performance. And people are beginning to talk about interest rate cuts as well. I mean, that's just going to fuel the performance in the sector as much as it hurt it going back to 2022. So what has changed is just that interest rate sentiment and then the discount rate people are using for those cash flows. And that led to a very strong rally in the final quarter when we had pretty passive commentary coming out from the Fed, you know, the ECB about where rates were going to go. And that gave investors confidence to say, right, rates have peaked and there may well be cuts in 2024.
Yes, I was reading some of our research and it looks like markets are pricing in, certainly in the US and UK, interest rates to fall to potentially 3% next year. This year. If that doesn't happen, is that going to cause an issue for the real estate sector?
No, and this is the interesting thing for us is, you know, we throughout the kind of weak performance in the stock market, we've been very consistent in saying all that we want to happen is stability in interest rates. We don't need rates to get cut for real estate to start performing because actually what investors have priced into listed real estate is a recession. And so we kind of feel that there's really quite attractive valuation opportunities in the market at the moment. And so, you know, really, you know, heading into a recession or the need for rates to be cut, we feel that's already baked into prices right now. And so if rates were to cut, I think I would see that more as kind of icing on the cake as opposed to kind of, you know, really what's needed to have, you know, strong performance at this point in time.
Because it feels like investors have almost disregarded a recession scenario. So you're saying even if it does go into recession, you know, real estate's had such a bad time that it probably wouldn't drive it down any further.
Yeah, we think that's priced in, exactly. And I think, interestingly for me, if we head into a recession, actually real estate can look quite an attractive asset class. I mean, if I think about our portfolio, on average, we've got an income stream contracted to high quality tenants for about 4 or 5 years. And so if you're heading into recession for, let's say, 2 or 3 years, whatever the time period, you've still got certain income stream coming through from high quality tenants that's going to be paid. And so, you know, your dividends that you're going to receive as investors, that's not going to change. And as I mentioned, you know, so long as interest rates don't start increasing again, that capital value of the assets, that will remain static as well. And so actually, I think real estate could be quite interesting if we head into a recession.
And if interest rates don't go down, there's still a few companies at risk, bearing in mind how much is the cost of capital and how much it's going to cost to repay whatever, you know, loans they've taken out.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, what you're going to see for, you know, a good 6 months into this year, if not longer, is pretty negative headlines about the real estate sector. But that's when you start to think about listed real estate and then the direct market. So listed real estate kind of moves quickly. It prices ahead based on new information. So when everyone saw that interest rates were going to increase, that was priced in to listed markets pretty quickly. The direct market is always a little bit slower to react. And so you're going to see investors who've got to refinance and they're going to see their equity wiped out. They're going to have to make distressed sales. There's going to be headlines about, you know, unlisted property funds, you know, having to sell or, you know, perhaps even going to bankruptcy because that refinancing is too much. And so that's what's going on in the direct market. The listed market is priced that new news now. But again, back to my point I made earlier, they've got strong balance sheets and there's a really, really, really different position in terms of that strength of the debt positions that the listed companies are in versus the direct market. And so we actually think some of the REITs are going to be in a really strong position to capitalize on that distress. If someone is selling a kind of trophy asset at a discounted rate, the REITs have access to debt and they've got access to equity. And I think actually that puts them in a really interesting position for the first time in almost 5 or 10 years where they've got the lowest cost of capital. And so I think we're expecting some of the REITs in our portfolio to do quite transformational deals over the next 6 to 12 months, taking advantage of that distress.
Okay, and just for the listener, can we just define what's the difference between a direct client and a listed?
Market? So, well, a listed company is a company whose shares are trading on the stock market. And so if you think about, if we were told today that interest rates were going to be rising for the next 2 years, you'd be selling, investors would generally be selling those shares because the value of the assets held by that listed company is going to fall. The direct market, it just gets priced when a building is bought or sold. And so, you know, that might take 6 months, it might take 3 months. So it's much slower to see those valuations move for some of these unlisted funds. Valuers might revalue them every quarter, maybe every 6 months, and it tends to be very lagged. And so that's sort of just the difference. And, you know, in the UK, we've had lots of headlines about bricks and mortar funds. When investors take money out of those funds, the fund itself needs to sell that building. And that's where you get those sort of suspensions. Whereas the listed market, it's always liquid, it's always open, but you have more volatility on the way up and the way down.
I was going to ask, how do investors that are reading those headlines differentiate between the two? You know, when do they panic, or when do they just say, okay, I've heard about that, that'll be fine in the future?
It's really just to do with valuation. And it's about understanding that the listed market has priced in the fact that interest rates are higher. They've priced in that there's sort of probably a recession on the way. And then direct market transactions that took place over the last 6 months or so, they probably weren't pricing that in. And so there's just a change in the information lag. It's a difference. The listed markets look forward and they move ahead of price changes. The direct market is always looking in the rearview mirror, so it tends to be slower to react to changes.
And one of the major themes, certainly since the pandemic, has been demand. Have you seen any pickup in demand, or has the market just settled at a certain level in terms of real estate demand from companies and from workers coming back into the cities?
Yeah, so it really depends on sort of which subsector you're looking at. But if we're just to talk about offices, it really depends where you are in the world. I mean, if you just sort of think about Europe, Europe as a region wants to work from home really more than most places around the world. I'd say kind of in Asia, Japan, Singapore, Hong Kong want to work from home the least. Europe is pretty high. And then in America, the West Coast of the States is almost kind of non-existent, if you like, in the office. And so you need to be very careful about where your office exposure is. And so we've absolutely seen cities themselves become very vibrant post-COVID. But what people are doing in cities is very different. There's less working in offices. There's more living in apartments or going out and sort of, you know, having fun in bars or restaurants or theatres, whatever it might be. And so it's about understanding the type of real estate you own in a city and how that's performed.
So you guys talk about global cities a lot. That thesis is still there? You still believe in the global city?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of very clear. I mean, if you just sort of look, for instance, at apartments, sort of occupancy and demand, wherever you are in the world, demand to live in a city is at record highs, vacancies at record low, rents are going up very quickly. And, you know, back to kind of the inflation that we've seen across the world, and in particular in the US, and the reasons why interest rates went up, one of those core sticky parts of US inflation was what was shelter, which is kind of owner's equivalent rent. And so, yeah, the thesis for a city is still as strong today as it was pre the pandemic, if not stronger, because we've now survived, if you like, another crisis. But it's just about understanding the type of real estate you own in that city and how you're going to benefit.
And are there certain subsectors of you talking about that are more interesting than others, or certainly more attractive than others?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, obviously kind of offices is going to be in the less attractive camp. And then something like data centers or logistics assets are going to be in the more exciting camp. And so one of the interesting things for us last year was the kind of the democratization of artificial intelligence and how that became a thing. Now, we've always known that kind of whether it's edge computing, artificial intelligence, was always going to drive data center demand at some point in time. And it came true last year. So we have seen demand for data centers increase dramatically, completely game changing. Rents, therefore, for people who own data centers are climbing very fast. And so that was the strongest subsector last year. So that's clearly a very interesting place to be invested right now. And we think that artificial intelligence will probably lead to an increase for data center demand of between 4 to 8 times. And we could be massively kind of underplaying that, because we just don't quite know how sort of strong artificial demand and how much it's going to impact our lives. But that's our early estimations. So that's very interesting. Another subsector I would call out would be kind of aging demographics and healthcare. So, you know, retirement communities, memory care, independent living, assisted living, everything that kind of plays to that kind of elderly demographic is really seeing very strong demand. Again, back over in the States, I think you've got 10,000 retirees a day moving into kind of the plus 65 age bracket. And that's really leading to very strong demand for age-restricted communities, those retirement communities, at a time when supply is at an almost all-time low. So again, rents are moving quickly.
Okay, so we've got lots of interesting themes there. If you could sum it up, the outlook for the next 12 months, maybe 18 months, what would you tell investors?
Yeah, so I think for investors, you've got a sector that's been repriced. You've got a sector that is priced in a recession, I would argue as well. And I think that unless you believe interest rates are going to increase dramatically, it's an interesting time from a valuation perspective to look at the sector. Plus, you add to that those management meetings I was referring to, the structural trends, compounding leading to extra demand for particular subsectors, you're going to get earnings growth. So we think that the sector, you know, even heading into a recession, looks quite attractively priced for a sector that has earnings growth as well.
Well, let's hope that all plays out for you and for hopefully all your investors as well. Tom Walker, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Tom, David, thank you very much indeed. To all of our listeners, thank you also for joining us, and we look forward to engaging with you further this year. And as I said at the beginning of the pod, please do get in touch with any comments, requests, or questions you may have. Keep well.
The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance and may not be repeated. Schroders Investment Management Limited is an authorised financial services provider. FSP number 48998. Registration number 01893220. Incorporated in England and Wales. The information is not an offer, solicitation or recommendation. Any funds, services or products mentioned might not be appropriate for all listeners. Please speak to a financial advisor if you are unsure as to the suitability of any investment.
The forecasts included are not guaranteed. They are provided only as at the date of issue and should not be relied upon. Our forecasts are based on our own assumptions, which may change. We accept no responsibility for any errors of fact or opinion and assume no obligation to provide you with any changes to our assumptions or forecasts. Forecasts and assumptions may be affected by external, economic or other factors.
Disclosures and risk factors. Collective investment schemes are generally medium to long-term investments. The value of participatory interest or the investments may go down as well as up. Past performance is not necessarily a guide to future performance. Collective investment schemes are traded at ruling prices and can engage in borrowing and scrip lending. A schedule of fees and charges and maximum commissions is available on request from the manager. The manager does not provide any guarantee either with respect to the capital or the return of a portfolio. The manager has a right to close the portfolio to new investors in order to manage it more efficiently in accordance with its mandate.